we started the article number seven, the seventh commandment. We got through 2401, the opening paragraph. That's what we're picking up at 2402, 2402 paragraph number. The first subheading under here is the universal destination and the private ownership of goods. 2402, in the beginning, God entrusted the earth and its resources to the common stewardship of mankind to take care of them, master them by labor, and enjoy their fruits. So I think everybody that is knowledgeable about the scriptures knows that. Both Christians and Jews would know that that comes directly from the book of Genesis, as God has given us everything. Those who do not believe in God, of course, do not believe in this right here. So if you're ever arguing with somebody about politics, communism versus capitalism versus libertarianism versus anything else, just know that you're not always arguing with people who have any belief in God whatsoever. So even something as simple as this, that we would all take for granted, you can't take it for granted with everybody. You might have to rethink how you're going to talk to them about different things. But this is something that is so well known that at least they know that this is our belief. The goods of creation are destined for the whole human race. However, the earth is divided up among men to assure the security of their lives, endangered by poverty and threatened by violence. You note that right there? This is for our good that the earth is divided up. It is for our good that we do not have one world government, that we do not all speak one language. Remember, God did that at the Tower of Babel. He made us babble, sounding like babbling to each other because we were getting so high on our horse, we thought we were going to be like God, building a tower to the heavens to conquer God himself. And he said, enough is enough. I'm going to have to split you up. You're not going to be able to understand each other because you are colluding with each other in such a way that is leading your souls into hell rather than leading you to me. So this is something that, again, we need to pay attention to. Every Jew, every Christian, Catholic or not, should understand this completely. And yet we have many that are trying to embrace anything but this. They think that we need to come together, and how wonderful it would be if we were all united in one. There were no borders, there were no walls, there were no separate governments, there was no separate religion. And they don't ever want the Catholic religion to be the one religion that rules everybody. They want anything but Catholic. They're just so far off, it's unbelievable that they would call themselves Jewish or Christian when they're embracing the opposite of what we know to be true. So again, this is just something that we would take, just an average Catholic would take for granted that everybody would believe, and yet it's not even held completely by the clergy today, which, God help us when I have to say words like that, it's terrible. But we do have clergy that see no reason to not embrace communism, socialism. We've had plenty of examples with that, especially in South America, where they fight for the communists, the clergy themselves fighting for that. It's just terrible that that is it. The church is very clear on this, though. We cannot have that. We are separated out by God himself. It was all put there for our own benefit. The appropriation of property is legitimate for guaranteeing the freedom and dignity of persons and for helping each of them to meet his basic needs and the needs of those in his charge. So when it's talking about property, it's not just talking about property like you own land. It's all the things that you do own. Your own car, your own clothing, your own house. All of that is property. And all of that is meant for the good of everybody. It is very good for me to have my own house. Now, I don't own it myself. The diocese owns the rectory, but everybody here knows that it is not their house. It would be horrible if we all owned it in common, and I would wake up in the middle of the night and find five other people in bed with me because they all claim ownership of my house, my bedroom, my own bed, and they're even wearing my Catholic pajamas. It just, it would not go well, and we all know it, but everybody thinks that somehow we can get around that if we just do it the right way, because everybody would respect you even if you didn't own your home. No, they don't. Following human nature would certainly show us very quickly that it doesn't work well. We need to have our own things. It's good for our human dignity as persons, for helping each other to meet the needs. It helps you to meet your own needs if we all have, just as an example, a private property of cars. You have your own needs, and guess what you get to do with your car? You get to drive it where you want to drive it, within the legal limits of roads and things like that, but you get to take it when you want. What happens if you decide not to take care of your car?
Falls apart.
It's going to fall apart, and it's not going to be available for you to drive when you want. But what if you don't have private ownership of that car? Am I going to take care of the car? Because I take care of mine. Mine, by the way, right now is older than some of you in this room. I'll tell you how old it is. This really baffles the young ones. I still have a cassette player in mine. And came with the car.
Yay.
Yeah. And the reason it's still running is because I take care of it, because it's mine.
Right.
If it was not available for my use when I want it and for the purposes I need it for, I'm not going to be taking care of any old car that just happens to come in here, because I'm not going to put my money into something that I might not ever see again, a car that you're going to drive away and it's going to end up in Brooksville, it's never going to be available for me. I'm not going to change the oil. I'm not going to change the brakes. I'm not going to do the things that need to be done on that car. But when it's mine, I'm going to take care of it. And if I don't take care of it, it's my own fault. And I can't blame you for not taking care of it. Something as simple as that makes such an important part of our life. We don't even think about how important a private property is, but it is. Whenever you get rid of private property, you don't have it. We can see something very similar to this with all the scooters we have around. How many scooters do you see that are just thrown along the side of the road or laying in the middle of the sidewalk? Those scooters that are not private property, they're somebody else's. And all we did was just take it for a spin and then abandon it to the weather and didn't care even whether it was anybody else's way. It's just kind of crazy. How many of those scooters, and they tried this with bicycles too, a great failure with the bicycles, even when they painted them bright orange so that they would be spotted, people would steal the bicycles. How many people really take care of those things that are there? You see them doing all sorts of horrible stuff when it's not theirs, and they don't care if the wheels break. They don't care if it's left to rot. So we know that, and this is just common sense. For those who are in their Catholic faith already, it should be common sense for everybody, but somehow we have a lot of people who have no common sense at all. All right, last line in there, it should allow for a natural solidarity to develop between men. And why natural solidarity? Because if these things are supposed to help each other, then what happens if I've got a car that's running and you don't have a car that's running? The solidarity we have, could you come over and say, hey, Father, I need a ride? Yes, you could. Now, am I likely to give you a ride if you've been treating me like dirt? No. So the solidarity comes in because you know that I have something that you could benefit from, and so you're going to treat me better than you would if I had nothing of value. And so we treat each other better, again, because of our fallen human nature. Without our fallen human nature, we would all treat each other perfectly all the time, no matter what. But as it is, we know better than that. You're going to help give a ride to somebody who treats you well, a neighbor who is not blaring their rap music at full decibel all night long, the neighbor who is not throwing garbage all over your lawn and not picking up after their dog pooping in front of your steps, right? This kind of stuff, you're gonna take better care of your neighbor when they're in need. So the solidarity comes in. Because you have something I need, I have something you need. Simple things like being able to go to the grocery store. I need food. the solidarity that I have, being able to know I can walk into a grocery store and get food because somebody else has supplied what I could not have. I could not raise a cow on my own. Well, over here, I probably could. There's enough property here. But it would make it a little bit more difficult for the kids to be playing soccer out there in the field. The cattle are out there doing their cattle business. 2403, this is one where there is a change from the original version to this version. They've changed the first sentence. The right to private property acquired or received in a just way does not do away with the original gift of the earth to the whole of mankind. Now, what they changed that from is it used to say the right to private property acquired by work or received from others by inheritance or gift. They got rid of that or received by inheritance or gift. They just said by if it's received in a just way. So any way, not just those two, inheritance or gift, there's many other ways you can acquire property. As long as it's a just way, then it is perfectly acceptable to have this. Okay, so the right to private property acquired or received in a just way does not do away with the original gift of the earth to the whole of mankind. So the things you receive, I'll use the example of an inheritance. People don't think of money as private property, but it is the money that you receive. It is not meant only for you. What is it meant for? All of mankind. And this is where our Lord, when he's talking about how hard it is for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven, said it's easier for what? The camel to enter through the eye of the needle than for the rich to enter the kingdom of heaven. Yeah, how hard is it for the camel to enter the eye of the needle?
Pretty hard.
It's pretty hard. Even if you go with the translation that the eye of the needle was one of the gates that was there and it was low down and camel couldn't walk through but had to get down and squish through. Even that is pretty hard. Why is it so hard for a rich man to get to the kingdom of heaven? Because we don't see the money as something that's supposed to help others. It's all for me. Even the very rich, the very wealthy that have these philanthropic, what do they call those? The trusts, the foundations, they are making fortunes off of these things. They're not doing it for the benefit of mankind, as far as I can see. There could be some outlier someplace, but from what I see, they're all doing it for their own well-being, not for others. They're not using it for the good of mankind. It's to give themselves more status. It's to give them the ability to point, look how good I am. But they're not using it well. We're going to see more about this coming up in this section that you'll notice. But there's something I have mentioned it in probably in this class before. I know I've talked about it other places when we're dealing with it, but if I am walking down the street and I smell some wonderful food cooking and I walk up to the front door and I knock on the door and I ask for food, if it is a poor family that is there and they see me out there asking for food, and they have just enough to get by, they will still share their food with me for the most part. But if I would do the same thing in a gated community, and it doesn't have to be a super rich community, just a gated community, and I was to walk up to the door and knock on it and say, would you share your food? And no. Why not? Well, I only purchased 4 ribeye steaks, and there's already 4 of us here, and so we don't have enough for you. We're not going to invite you in. We get selfish when we get a lot of things. And this is something that, now I'm giving this example, you know that not every poor person is going to invite me in either. Just as no, not every rich person is going to send me away. But I think you probably see the more truth in the poor person sharing than the rich person sharing. And what they're sharing is like the widow's mite. They share what they need rather than excess, but the rich people oftentimes won't even share their excess. It really is a shame. We're seeing this a lot with big businesses who are nearly enslaving their people, giving them as little money as possible and as much work as possible, as much oversight as possible to make sure that they're not getting any kind of rest whatsoever. And the owners and the stockholders are making out like bandits, but they are lying, cheating, and stealing from everybody else to get those profits. This is why people do go to the opposite extreme and say, we want communism because that gets rid of that. That's not the solution. The rich people have a hard time realizing that they got rich in order that God allowed this to happen, in order that they would give to him and to his people. They would build up mankind. An example that somebody gave one time was a wealthy man who's now been in trouble, so I'm not going to mention who he was, but he had an income of $100 million. $100 million. What if he gave 10%, the normal tithe, to the church, to his parish? How much money would he be given? $10 million. What could the church do with $10 million? Church could do a lot. Would the church do a lot? I'm not sure that the church would, because now the pastor is rich. And the bishop is looking at that and saying, I want my share. And, you know, there's a lot that would go into it. But just assuming, what would he do? $10 million given to the church. How much does he have left? $90 million. What's he going to do with that? Does he need $90 million? Oh, well, Father, you can't take that away from him. This is what the government wants to do, right? Well, we're going to take it away. We're going to tax you 90% or whatever it is that they would want to do, because they are going to take it and they're going to do what with it? Spend it wisely? No, everybody knows that the government's going to enrich the people who are in government or expand it so their brother-in-law gets into government too and makes it wealthy. But really, when you take a look at it, the rich man gives 10%, assuming he is a good, solid Catholic. He's going to give 10% to his church. And then he's going to give alms. Remember, alms is over and above tithing. It's something different. Alms is giving to the people who are in need. And he's a good, solid Catholic. So let's say he gives another 10% to the people that he knows are in need. How much does he have left? $80 million. And this is a yearly income. What's he going to do with $80 million? Is he going to be able to spend it on things that he actually needs? No, because nobody needs $80 million. He's going to either keep it or he's going to spend it on things that are frivolous. Like a super mega yacht that's going to cost $60 million just by itself, and then a couple million dollars a month to keep it going. And he's going to get on that yacht 3 times, and that's it. What good is that? You see how hard it is for that man to then stand before a board and say, what did you do with your money? But Father, it's his money. Yes, it is. But the idea of a Catholic is that God gives you the things of this world to take care of him and his people. God doesn't need the money directly, but his people do. And so the worship of God is something his people needs. And so we should be giving to the church. We should be supplying beautiful churches, not garbage-looking churches. To the extent possible, God gets better than what we have. Think about that. Remember David? In the Old Testament, when he's saying, look at this, I'm in luxury and wealth, and our Lord, the tabernacle, is just dwelling in a tent. I'm going to build a magnificent temple for him. Now God said, no, you're not going to. Your son is going to be the one doing it. But he didn't say, don't do it at all. I like living like this. I think this is proper for people to see me in a tent while you're living it up high on the hog. He didn't say that. He said, no. Your son is going to do this, and I want you to know that you are correct. I deserve better than what you have. Gosh, that's something that we've lost in our church today. We have so many people, it's always been this way, people saying, oh, you know, we need to get rid of the things that are beautiful, no gold, no ornaments, no stained glass windows, look at all the money we're spending on high roofs and things like that. None of that should be given. We should give all to the poor. And the Lord said very clearly, the poor you will always have with you.
Yeah.
It doesn't say don't give to the poor, but God deserves our best. And that should be our first and foremost thing we're looking at.
Is it okay to have like a lot of excess money in our savings, like for medical emergencies or for a new house, whether for ourselves or for our family?
Okay, I can't give specifics as to when you can have stuff that is set aside, but in general, yes, we're called to set aside things for ourselves. And again, we're going to get into this a little bit more deeply, and you'll see it actually in the church teaching. But we are not called, for the most part, we are not called to live in poverty. God will call some people completely, get rid of everything, like he told to the rich man who approached him and said, what must I do? And our Lord said, keep the commandments. He goes, oh, we're already doing that. He said, well, you're still attached to all the things of this world. Get rid of everything, sell it all, give to the poor, come and follow me. He didn't like that. Not everybody's called to that radical lifestyle. The apostles themselves, remember, they left everything to follow our Lord, but they kept their bones. How do I know that? Because after he died, what'd they do? They went fishing. Ah, yeah, so they kept their bones. So there's even the apostles still had things that were set aside. So yes, we're allowed to do that for the most part. If God tells you something different and he says, I want you to live in poverty, then by all means, sell everything you have and don't worry about medical emergencies and things like that. But for the most part, we're supposed to. In fact, as a diocesan priest, I am different than the religious order priest. Religious orders, each of the priests there takes vows of poverty along with the other two that they have. Poverty. I don't take a vow of poverty. I have an income that goes to me, not to my religious order. So my income comes to me. That allows me to have a car. Where they don't have their own car, the religious order has to supply whatever their needs are. I'm expected to set aside money for myself. The religious order priest, he has a place to live until he dies with the religious order taking care of him. I don't have that. At my retirement, I'm on my own. This is what I have to set aside money for, so that I'll have a place to stay, that I'll have food to eat, I'll be able to have a car or anything I need. I could say I'm not going to take any of it. I'm going to give it all away, and when my retirement comes in, I'll live on the streets with the street people that I have to minister to all the time. I could do that. God hasn't told me that that's what he wants me to do. And really, I hope he doesn't. I think the government might tell me that's what he wants me to do. And so I'm open to that possibility. But for myself, I think it would be against my will rather than because of my will. And then I have to change my will and to be able to embrace it. But most people are not called to that radical lifestyle. Francis was, St. Francis, and many people were attracted to it after he gave up everything to live a radical lifestyle of poverty. Many, many people attracted to it. That's why the Franciscans grew so much. Now, not so much. Franciscans seem to live higher in the hog than anybody else, which is kind of a shame. But this has happened to religious orders all the way through. There's always had to be reformers coming in and saying, let's go back to what we have been at before.
Father, could you address the church's ennobling of, and this is not a universal statement, but the ennobling of the poor who use their voting power to insert whatever word you want to obtain others' property, whether it's money, whether it's domicile, whatever, without any consequence of their perception that they in fact may be sinning.
Okay, I'm not sure I've got exactly what you're looking for as how you're putting it. If you're asking about things like the church with the Campaign for Human Development, giving to organizations that will go against Catholic Church teachings. I think it's a sham as well as a shame. And I think it's sinful on behalf of those who are knowingly giving the money to places that go against, fighting against Catholic Church teaching, and yet we're giving Catholic money to them. We're not ever called to do that. We don't have to supply weapons to the man who's at war against us, and yet we have men in the church that are doing that very thing. I think that's a horrible thing. If that's the kind of thing you're asking about, I can't justify it in any way. That particular collection has been scrutinized for many, many, many years, and every year it's the same thing. It's not most of the money going to bad places, but there is always money going to bad places, and the bishops always have the same response when it's brought out. It's a horrible response. They always lie, and they say, no, we're not giving to any place that is anti-Catholic. We're not giving to any place. In our charter, it says we can't even give to the organizations that work with the organizations that are fighting against us. And they say, we're not doing any of that. And then the proof comes out, and then they change from, well, we're not doing it, to it's not substantial, or something along those lines. But it's every year the exact same thing. And they just know that most Catholics aren't paying attention to them. And the ones that are labeled the crackpots, the conspiracy theorists, the nuts. And the reason for that going on is because we have enough in the hierarchy of the church right now that are immoral themselves. They want these things supported because they are not truly Catholic in their faith. It's a shame.
Father, I think that all of us who are trying to be really good Catholics and grow in holiness, I think we do feel anxiety every once in a while when we keep hearing our Lord say to sell everything and follow him. And so we think to ourselves, okay, well, we have a house and we have a coat and we have shoes. And so are we doing what we need to do vis-a-vis that command? And so if you could just, and it was just really helpful what you said before, that the apostles still had their boats. And so if you could just clarify that a little bit, that is it that what we're all called to as good Catholics is to give up our own will and kind of submit that to the will of God? Is that kind of what we're all called to? And then there are gradations of what we're called to more specifically with regards to giving up everything. Like if you feel a call to the religious life, then you give up more than somebody might if they're not in the religious life when it comes to physical things.
All right, we're all called to give up some things. Even with a vocation, somebody that is called to become a Franciscan in the best of Franciscan worlds, right? Gonna give up everything, live impoverished, have nothing, but they're gonna live in community. That community is gonna take care of them. They're gonna build each other up. They're gonna rely on the grace of God to give them food and shelter and everything else is there. Even among those, they're going to have need for shelter. The Franciscans will have a place to live. They're going to need the habits. They will have that, even if they have to beg for the money to pay for the rent, pay for the upkeep, pay for the maintenance, pay for the maintenance band, do all that kind of stuff. They have to have something coming in to do that. They have to have clothing. If they have to beg Mrs. McGillicuddy to make them a habit, you know, out of her own free will, generous offering, they will do that. But for everybody that's called to do that, and you see what they're giving up, they're giving up life, and they're giving up family, they're giving up their material possessions, it's harder to see the opposite. What if he gets married? If God calls him to married life, what is he giving up? He's giving up everything that the Franciscan held dear to him. On his path to salvation, by getting rid of the things of the world, he made it easier for him to be holy. If he's really able to get rid of the things of the world and only focus on the things of the next world. The married man gives up all that. His primary duty at this point is to take care of his wife and children. He's giving up the leisure of being able to spend hours and hours in prayer. He's giving up the ability to give everything away. His first and primary responsibility is for his children. If the man who's a family man gives away his paycheck, what happens to his family? Then we're going to get through this in this section. We just started it, but it will come up there that we have to take care of family first. Family first, always, always that. So everybody's called to give up something different. The further teachings of the church, which are not spelled out clearly in here, but you can find them in Thomas Aquinas and other places about what you're supposed to do, every man has a role in life, a state of life that he is supposed to keep proper for his state of life. There will be a few outliers where God will tell a king, for instance, to give up his royalty, to give up his crown, to sell off his gold, to dress as a pauper. We see this every once in a while, but not too often. For the most part, they're told, even by good church authorities, not by the crazy, unfaithful church authorities, they're told by the good church authorities, this is your state of life, this is how you dress. This is your state of life, this is how you live. You are the king. So just as Christ, the king, is supposed to have better than everyone else, a secular king is supposed to have better than everyone else. There's different stages of life. We don't have a feudal system, but it's quite apparent in a feudal system as to who was the master and who was underneath, and you live according to that state of life. Again, you're supposed to do it with the idea of everything I have as a feudal lord is to keep all of those underneath me with all that they need for their sustenance, and not just barely, but enough for extra as well. We're supposed to do that. A feudal lord can't do that if he's given away everything. Now the people under him have nothing. He's worthless as a feudal lord. We have the same thing in our society, even though there's not an official feudal system. We have the same thing in our society. If you want to be a doctor, how many years of medical school do you have to pay for? Not go through, how many do you have to pay for? How much debt are you going to get? Now, what if we tell the doctor that he's not going to get a paycheck? He's got to give it all away. Even if he's single, he still can't survive, right? So there is everybody's got it at their different job, has a different level of creature comforts that they should have, and they should live up to it. Are you going to trust a lawyer that comes up driving a 2002, what was those little cars back there that no longer are made? The U-Bills. Yeah, how about a U-Bill? It's got rusty door frame and everything else, and this is what he's driving up. Are you going to trust him to be a successful lawyer when you need a good lawyer for something? I don't think so.
No.
You're going to look at it, if that's how you're living, you're not going to look and say, wow, what a frugal man. He must have given all of his money to the poor, and he's really been taking care of the church, and God's people come first. Chances are you're going to be looking at that and saying, he must not have ever won a case in his entire life. He can't afford even the car that I have. I'm not hiring for that. So he's got to live up to his state of life in a different way than if he was a poor man. Okay, so there's not a set answer as to how much you should have, and everyone has to give up other things, okay? There's always different types of property that you're giving up, different ways of life that you're giving up. And again, it's harder. The church has always said this. It is easier for the Franciscan, truly living Franciscan life, easier for him to get to heaven than for a married man raising a family to get to heaven, because he's got the time to dedicate to loving God if he doesn't. Now, he's also got a deeper place in hell if he doesn't use it properly, right? Because that's more to whom much has been given. And much has been given to him when he's given up everything. Much has been given. To whom much is given, much is expected. And if he doesn't give back what God's expecting, he's in trouble. Take from that man the one denarios and give it to the one who is 10. All right. Continuing on. This 2403 is where we are. Everything is supposed to go, property that you have, that you receive, that you earn, anything is supposed to go to the whole of mankind in some way, shape, or form. The universal destination of goods remains primordial, even if the promotion of the common good requires the respect for the right to private property and its exercise. And it does require that. So the primordial, that means from the very beginning, the whole reason for us having this is for the use for others as well as ourselves, not specifically for me to become the most wealthy person in the world for my own selfish reasons, keeping it all to myself as I watch others who are in need go without when I could supply their needs, right? Now, it does put a burden on each one of us to take a look and try to discern, am I giving to the people I should be giving? Am I keeping what I should be keeping? Am I using it for God's glory or for myself? It's a very difficult thing to discern, and I do not have any clear-cut answers because every situation is different. Even something as simple as, do you give to the guy on the street corner who has a sign out there saying, need work? And you offer him a job, he doesn't want a job. What does he want?
Drug money.
He wants money for?
Drugs.
Drugs and alcohol. Everybody knows that, right? Yeah, so do I. I want money for drugs and alcohol. Seriously. Seriously, when I get sick, what do I want?
Drugs.
Yeah, I want the drugs. Go to the doctor, give me the stuff that's going to make me well. The rest of the time, I don't have to get sick to want the alcohol. You know what? I'm going to have a drink. Let's have a toast. Everybody knows it. This is what we want. Nobody condemns me for saying that I want drugs and alcohol. If I was standing out on the street corner saying, I'll work for food, and that I'm not willing to work, they would condemn me, right? And rightly so, because all I'm doing is, but if I took a sign out there, and this is why I'm growing the beard, by the way, so that when I am homeless and I'm out there, I'm already ready for this, I'm going to have a sign out there that says, I'm not going to work for food. I want a bottle of 12-year-old single malt scotch. Yeah, you think people will give it to me? Yeah, they probably would. There'd be somebody that would go over there and be like, wow, that's a cool sign. And they go to the liquor store and they get this bottle of scotch, and if it costs them $75, they're getting me a $75 bottle of scotch. What am I going to do with that? You know what? The homeless guys you give the alcohol to, they share it with each other. This is the amazing thing about these guys. You ever spend some time with them, you find out. When you're giving them money and they're going out there and they're buying a bottle of the lowest shelf vodka that they have, they're not drinking it by themselves, they're sharing it with each other. They have nothing, they're sharing it. Even the things that are bad for them, they're going to share it with each other. But do you have to supply that for them? You've got extra money in your pocket. Could you give them something? Could you go down to the liquor store and buy a case of 12-year-old scotch or $3 vodka and give it to them and say, here you go? Could you do that? Father, why would I do that? I'm going to give them something bad for them? You'd give it to me, wouldn't you? Is it any better for me?
No.
But Father, you got to figure this out. We say, but Father, you're an alcoholic. I'm not going to give it to you. Okay. That makes sense, doesn't it? Don't give it to them. But you know what? Sometimes even an alcoholic needs a drink. Do you give it to them?
No.
It's hard to figure out. What if you give them money and they actually use it for food? Is that helping them? As long as we supply the needs of the guys that are out there in the street, do they have any incentive to get off the street? So you can make that argument, no, they don't. So if I don't supply their needs, they're going to get off the street. Somebody else will come back and say, but if you don't supply their needs, they're going to start breaking into my house, break into my car, break into your house, your car. So by giving them money, you're keeping them from being thieves, which is a worse sin than begging, right? Begging, you have an option to give or not give. Thievery, they're stealing from you. They're breaking this commandment that we're talking about right now. What do you do? Boy, that's a hard one. I don't have answers for everything.
We used to have this discussion a long time ago. Mom and I used to be secular Franciscans, so we're a little more bent that way. But one of the things was, as far as giving somebody something that they're going to use for the wrong thing, because we all have free will, we're called to give. And then they have free will, and then they use what they've received according to their own free will at that time. And just as you were talking with others, one of the ladies in my Saturday night choir, she and her husband live a couple, like half a block down the way, and they walk everywhere and take the bus. And she has like this ministry to all the homeless people in the area. And she's always, they're on the low end of things, but if somebody gives her something, she always makes sure she has some cash or a sandwich or something to give one of the guys or ladies or a lot of women actually. And when the thing the diocese did with the city, the Hope Camp thing that they're building anymore, she took it, now she doesn't work for them, but because she cares about the homeless people, she got the flyers and she got, before she got the flyers, she was writing information on index cards to give to them because they don't know that there's a place that they can go. And so she would always give them a couple dollars or a snack or whatever, and this information, and I think she's like cleaned up the whole neighborhood because she's funneled them down to that program. And then that program funnels them into other programs depending on what their needs are assessed. So go talk to Beverly sometime.
You want to point it out.
It's really cool. People take it upon themselves and they say, what can I do to help? And they try to the best of their ability, say, I believe this will help. And what you think is harmful, they might say, this is helpful. And in things like this, we have prudential judgment. There is no evil versus good in what you're doing to help out the poor. But you're both going to have to answer to God for the end. Did you at least try to do what was right? Did you at least try to do it? We oftentimes don't. I'm not going to give to the poor on the street corner because he's going to use it for the wrong things. Okay. Are you going to help anybody who's poor that's going to use it for the right things? Or is that just an excuse to not give so that you've got the money in your own pocket? Well, I don't know where to give to. How about finding a place? It's easy enough if you want to do a search for it and figure out what to do. Maybe if you don't know anything about the poor, maybe you should actually start working with them. When's the last time you actually spent some time? Now, there's a difference in this too. If you're dealing with somebody who's standing on the street corner and you are, sorry, an old lady.
How dare you?
You might be putting yourself in danger because a lot of them are mentally unbalanced. And if you get into a place where you're talking with them in a place that's not highly trafficked and everything, you could be in danger yourself. So you could say, no, I can't do that. Where some strapping young man who is able to take care of himself would have no problem at all doing it. Everybody's called to do different things, different ways, different times, different places. But there's things that I would do as a priest that I wouldn't suggest others do. I was on vacation and I was up in, I think I was in the Carolinas, I'm not sure. Oh, okay. Some mountain place.
On top of the mountain.
And I had stopped. It was the only time that I had been in a hotel. They didn't have a cup of coffee in the morning. Mm-hmm. And it was a little tiny country inn that I had stopped in, and they had no coffee. So I stopped at McDonald's to get a coffee. And as I was in there to get a coffee, the lady who had rung up the coffee for me came over, and I'm sitting down at the table reading my breviary, drinking the coffee, and she came over to me and she whispered to me, she was Father, no, she didn't call me Father. don't remember what she called me, it's kind of funny though. Nobody in that area knows what a Catholic priest is. I know we're some kind of a preacher man or something. But she said, you know, there's a homeless guy over here, and he's a good guy. I know him. And he needs some help. Would you be able to help him out? I've given him everything that I can, and I don't have anything to help him. Could you do something for him? So the homeless guy that she's talking about was somebody that in my younger days, I would have felt completely safe being around him because he was smaller than I am, but he was muscular. He had tattoos every place, and he had long hair. He was definitely not the kind of guy that you would want to hang out with, or that I would want to hang out with, but it's somebody that I wouldn't have had a problem in my younger days. But now looking at it, it's like he's at the peak of his physical abilities, and he certainly looks like he's at the peak of his demonic abilities, too. But yeah, let me talk to him. And so his story was the same as what the cashier told me, that he had a job that he couldn't, he was walking to get the job, he needed a ride. And so I said, yeah, climb in. I wouldn't suggest that for most people. Just looking at him, I wouldn't have trusted him at all to do it. But I'm a Catholic priest, and guess what? People recognize I'm a Catholic priest, even if they don't know I'm a Catholic priest, they know I'm some kind of a man of God, some kind of preacher man, some kind of pastor, something. And so this is an opportunity for me to talk with him. And what's the worst that's going to happen? Mm-hmm. He kills me. Okay. So if I die helping somebody, that's not a bad way to die. I just don't see it. Well, Father, we need you around. No, you don't.
Yeah, we do.
God will supply your needs as well. So I give him a ride. It's early in the morning. And he doesn't know exactly where we're going, which is not ever a good sign, because if he can't tell me where we're going, it's going to a job that he's going to, and he's got this story that I've heard a million times before, even from down here, everybody's got the same thing, you know, people steal their money. What happens? The homeless people steal each other's money left and right. They do all sorts of, even though they'll share stuff with each other, also hurt each other terribly. But this is just, his story was getting more and more convoluted as we're driving through these country roads, and it's still kind of dark because the light has just been coming out, and we're twisting and turning, and there's nobody around, and he's got the wrong place, and we got to go to another backtrack and going all over, and he's going through this whole thing, and it's like, where are we going to end up? I'm looking for the guy with the banjo, right? And well, we finally, he's told me where we're going and what to be looking for. We did find it. We got to this place. It took a long time. I have no idea how to ever walk there. Thanks be to God that I was able to give him a ride over to where he was, because it would have taken him forever if he didn't know where we're going riding. Maybe he did walking, because there's a different perspective when you're walking than when you're in a car. But we finally got to the place. And so I asked him if he was okay from here, and he was. And I gave him some stuff that he needed, and he started crying. He said, "Nobody's ever treated me like this." I said, "Wow." Now, I'm not saying this because, as I said, I wouldn't suggest most people do it, but he was truly grateful for what was given. And I would have never thought about helping him out if the McDonald's cashier hadn't come over and told me that he was a good guy and that she's helped him out and she can't help any further. I never would have done it, probably, if I was not dressed with a Roman collar where I'm kind of public about what I'm doing or not doing, who I'm helping or not helping. I probably wouldn't have done it if I was female. It just wouldn't have made sense. But because of all the circumstances that God put around here and put me in, I was able to do this. This man was just, he was incredibly thankful for what it was. I have things like that happen all the time. just spending time. We must have spent 20 minutes in the car together, talking. And most homeless guys don't have anybody that wants to talk to them, just sitting down. I find it very helpful, instead of giving them a dollar at the stop sign or the light, to take them out and sit down and have a meal with them. Not too many people can do that. We've got other people I know here in this parish that always carry sandwiches. And they got a little cooler to keep it fresh, and they give sandwiches. And that's what they want. Others, they give money. Everyone's got to figure out what to do. What's the best thing you can do? But we're going to be answering for this sometime. What's going to happen with the guys that are the multi-billionaires? You think that they give anything when they've got something like this? Do they ever see people like this? When instead of giving to people, they're trying to figure out how to wring more out of people. That camel is going to have an easier time getting through that eye of the needle than the rich people. As a priest, again, as I said, the Franciscan who gave up everything has got the easiest way to get to heaven, but also the deepest part in hell. As a secular priest, I don't have it quite as easy as a Franciscan, but I've got it easier than you. And all the money, as I mentioned before, the things I have to save for, what if I'm using it just selfishly for my own stuff? I have to answer for that too. And because I do wear a collar and I am visible, it's easier for me, even if I don't want to do things that are good for others. Even if it's for the wrong reasons, or at least not for the best reasons, God still gives me the opportunity to do so, where he doesn't put you in the same position. Everyone's got a different state of life, different things we have to do. What do we do with our private property? We should be using it for the sake of others. So we're going to continue in this, because you're going to see what it talks about as far as property and using it for others in this section. 2404, in his use of things, man should regard the external goods he legitimately owns. Now, notice legitimately owns. There's a reason they put legitimate, not just ownership. There are many things that people have that are illegitimately gained. They don't truly own those things. The best example, easiest example, is somebody who just stole my car. He's got possession of it. Does he actually own it? Even if he puts the title into his name somehow, does he really own it? No, it's not a legitimate ownership. Okay, it still belongs to me by all rights, except for the legal part he finally managed to put into his name. We have this going on with housing titles right now. Right? You keep hearing about the scams where they take over somebody's housing and they either make big loans against it and it gets repossessed or foreclosed on, or they sell it. While you're on vacation, somebody sells your house. What a horrible thing. So legitimately owned things is what they're talking about here, not the illegitimate stuff. In his use of things, man should regard the external goods he legitimately owns not merely as exclusive to himself, but common to others also, in the sense that they can benefit others as well as himself. So I've got the car, I benefited the guy that needed a ride. I don't have to give everybody a ride, I'm not a taxi service, but I can give that to some people. I use my car for what other purposes? For the benefit of the homebound that I have to go and visit and bring them Holy Communion and hear their confessions when they can't come into church. For the people who need a house that's blessed and I go over there to visit them. There's a lot of different things that I use for that particular thing, my car. I use it for many uses that are good for other people. You all have the same thing. Why do you have a car? Because we got 8 kids and they got to get to softball practice and they got to get to their job and they have to get to this place and that place. You need to have a car. You're using it, even though it's for your own family, it's not you yourself that's using it exclusively. It is for others. Imagine if you had a family, 8 kids in your family, and no, this is my car. No, you're not going anyplace. This is my car. It's only used for me. No, no, you walk to church. I'm driving. This is my car. We're going to do, how silly that would be. Right? This is what we're talking about, the use of benefit for others. The ownership of any property makes its holder a steward of providence with the task of making it fruitful and communicating its benefits to others, first of all his family. First of all his family. Notice that, first of all his family. That's an important thing to emphasize, because sometimes people think that if they're going to be truly Catholic, if they're going to follow Christ, they have to give to others first. No, you take care of your family first. Why? That's why God gave you a family in the first place. If you destroy your family by giving to others, you have not done what God wants you to do. We have this problem in the church. It is an ongoing problem in the church. We have the people who are volunteering in the church. They will volunteer. They're great people. They will volunteer for anything and everything. And they're wonderful in what they do. We love to have people volunteer. And we call the family church widows. We have to be on guard against that. Church widows. Why? Because mom's never there. She might as well be dead. She's not at home for her husband. She's not at home for her children. She's at the church all the time. And how do you complain about it? Where were you at church? Oh, you can't fight that, right? So it's like she's got this reason why she's not with her family, because she's at the church. And what are you doing at the church? She's doing things we need. She's there at First Friday Adoration, or she's running First Friday Adoration. She's there at the American Heritage Girls, or she's running American Heritage Girls. She's there at the Women's Council, or she's running the Women's Council. She's there cleaning the tables. Whatever it is, she's here doing something we need. It's always good, holy things going on in the church. How can you complain about that? You complain about it because she's not at home where her first priority lies. First priority is family. Very, very easy to see. If you are a mother, sorry dads, if you are a mother and you've got a sick child at home on a Sunday morning, do you go to Mass or do you stay home and take care of your kid? It's a mortal sin to purposely miss Mass on a Sunday or Holy Day of Obligation. Do you go to Mass or do you stay home and take care of your kid? What does the church teach on this? Stay home and take care of your sick kid. It is not sinful, even venial sin, to stay home and take care of your kid. You do what God has given you to do. You are a mother. You take care of your children, even at the expense of something you've had to give up. It's not something you should be saying, woohoo, yeah, I don't have to go to Mass. You should be saying, I wish I could go to Mass, and I can't. Our Lord is offering his life for my salvation, and I can't be there at the holy sacrifice, but my child needs me. Wow, what a great thing to understand. I'm giving up this, the most important thing, to take care of my kid. The people who have no faith, they don't understand that at all. They look at it the opposite. Any excuse to stay home. When they miss Mass, they do not miss Mass at all. But for somebody who misses Mass and misses it, they know, I gave up something very, very important. Like the Franciscan who gave up a wife and kids, or the family man who gave up being a Franciscan, they both gave up something important. The mother who has to take care of the kids knows that she gave up something important. Why do you do it? That's what God gave you first and foremost. Your job is to take care of your kids, get them to heaven. All right, continuing on. Family, family, family first. 2405. Notice this is small print. Whenever we have the paragraphs like that, that is explaining what happened just above. Goods of production, material or immaterial. So remember this. Material is the things we always look at the most, but there's also immaterial things that are of our possession, such as land, factories, practical or artistical or artistic skills oblige their possessors to employ them in ways that will benefit the greatest number. Not just to benefit themselves, not just to benefit a few. If they can benefit everybody, how much greater is that? All right, now they don't have to go have a head count and have everyone raise their hand, are you gonna benefit from this or not? You have to do it to the best of their ability. But artists, what is the greatest thing an artist can do? Do something for the church. Father, you're just saying that because you're a priest. No, I'm saying it because this is what he can do. God gave him the ability to be a great artist. He should use it for the glory of God. And the greatest way of doing it is to do it for the church. In the years past, what have we seen? How many great artists came from families like yours? If you take a look up north and you see those magnificent churches that were built, you're thinking artists, you're thinking about somebody who's out there painting. Not always. How about the artists that made the sculptures, that designed those beautiful buildings, that put their time into the stained glass? How many of the artists that gave everything, all of their life, because the church wasn't interested in building a building that was up in 6 months so that we can occupy it and it would collapse in 30 years. The church wanted a building that showed the permanence of God. And so they built these things that would last forever, or at least as close to it as we could get. And it took a long time. In the older days, before even the U.S. was built, how many of the oldest churches, when you had a job as an artist working on a church, you knew that it was not just you, but your son and your son, son's son, and perhaps longer before that church would ever be completed. And you would pass on the trade for the glory of God, also for yourself, because you've got a job, you've got a way of supporting your family. But what a great thing it is. It is not in order to put your work to use for something bad. It is for God himself. Well, could you use that same skill for building other people's houses? Yes, you can. But is that the same? No. Is it necessary? Of course it is. But just like the Franciscan is better off being a Franciscan, giving up everything in this world, an artist is better off, the most important place you can do it, giving to God directly. And then after that, to others. Making sure that he's got his own ability to raise his family. His family comes first. These things we have to pay attention to when it's talking about artistic skills, land, factories. The goals should be helping others. Something with.
Sorry. About the artists, but also with the musicians.
Yeah.
I went through a time after my thyroid surgery. Some surgery, whatever it was. I had no voice for 6 months at all. I couldn't talk above a whisper. I couldn't sing. I couldn't do anything. I was leading a folk group at another parish at the time, so somebody had to do it. And I had these exercises to do, but there was no guarantee that it was going to come back at all. They said, well, do the exercises. If it hasn't come back in a year, then we'll think about it. And so I prayed, and I said, okay, Lord, if you give me my voice back, I will use it for you. And I was singing in 6 months.
So beautiful. You're still singing.
Yep.
And in case you didn't know this, not only was she singing in 6 months, but if you've ever been to our one Novus Ordo Mass that we have during the week, the Saturday evening Mass, when I first came here, nobody in the choir, now remember this is a very small Mass. Sometimes I think we have more people in the choir than we have in the pews. Nobody in the choir even knew how to read music. They had no idea what they were doing. They were all doing it for God, not for any other reason. They're doing it for God. But there was definitely a need for somebody to teach them how to do it well. And she stood up and said, "I'll do it." And it's a great sacrifice to herself to come in and do that. And the difference is incredible. So if you go in there now, if you're going to go to the Novus Ordo Mass, you are going to hear people that still can't read music, I don't think. Are they getting better? Okay. So that, but they sing so much with a beauty coming out of it instead of just squawking by. And again, when I'm saying squawking, I'm not saying to put anybody down. And this is one of the things most people won't do. If they can't sing well, if they can't do anything, they're not going to do it because it's embarrassing. They're afraid of what everyone's saying. And yet these people did. They just did the best they can. And
now they do Latin and chant, and we did our first musical.
Oh my goodness. Latin chant and polyphony now. All right. That's great. Wow.
Yeah.
All of that.
Nobody shows up. We had this discussion in the choir because, hardly anybody shows up. And so I said, well, back in the old days, the noble people would have their own private chapel, and they would just have their own mass. And so it's just our own private mass.
The private mass.
Everybody else shows up, that's fine, but it's we're there for
them. Right. Right, so it really is, it's a small mass, sometimes 20 people, and there's 7, 8, 9 people in the choir. And I'm guessing when they're counting the people, they're counting the altar boys and the priest too. All one altar boy. But anyway, it's just beautiful. Giving to God, first and foremost, is something that we're supposed to do. And again, that's a great example of artistic skill that's not a tangible thing, but to be able to sing, to be able to lead music, to be able to play music. Now, just as a side note, this is why we take so long to get through this stuff. When I first came here to the parishes, as you know, there was no mass here, and there were very few people that were here, and Bishop Lynch had sent me here telling me to turn it into a Latin Mass center for Tampa Center for the Traditional Latin Mass, is the way he officially put it, Tampa Center for the Traditional Latin Mass. So I came here to do it. And one of the guys in the Vigil Mass choir was so excited to find out that we're going to have traditional Latin Mass here because he was finally going to be able to use his bongo drums. He just didn't understand it was not Latin, Latino Latin. But that was what he really was just excited about this. He's still at the Novus Ordo Mass. He hasn't joined the Latin. And it's a good thing because he's in the choir and part of it. All right, continuing on. 2405, those who hold goods for use and consumption should use them with moderation, reserving the better part for guests, for the sick, and the poor. That is asking a lot, isn't it? The things that we have, because we're the ones that hold things in, hold goods for use and consumption. Those things we have, we're supposed to set aside more for others than for ourselves. That's an ideal that I'm not sure many people even have heard of, let alone strive to reach. Do you help out others with the things that are extra? It's not saying of your own needs, the things you have extra. Do you use it for others? For guests? Those people you would like and invite over to your house and things like that, do you use it for them? Do you use it, use your things in moderation? Or do you use all that you have so that you have nothing left for anybody else? Not because you're trying to keep up with your state of life, but because you want to pretend like you're in a greater state of life than what you are. This is a terrible thing. Talking to families about housing right now. Housing is incredibly expensive. What happens if you can't pay your bills and you're living in a big mansion someplace in South Tampa? You can't pay your bills because the price has gone sky high on everything. Your tax bill has skyrocketed. Your insurance has gone through the roof, and you had bought that McMansion because you needed extra space for the kids, so you said, and you were using every dime of your income for paying for it, and now we've got at least a 15% increase over what your paycheck is. Talking to people about something like this, you say, well, gosh, why don't you sell that McMansion and move into a trailer park? Mm-hmm. Father, I can't do that. A trailer park? You can't afford anything else right now, can you? Because what you paid for your McMansion 2 years ago, you now have to pay for something that's only about half that size now. What can you really afford to pay? A trailer park would give you extra. What's wrong with the trailer park? We're afraid of doing things like that. A radical change in life. It will hurt your family to move into a trailer park, right? That's what everyone thinks. I don't know. The people I grew up with, of course I grew up in a different time, but the people I grew up with that grew up in trailer parks, they're just as happy as anyone else. In fact, maybe more so because they had more kids to play with because they were all right there on top of each other as there was no big yard and fenced in area and everybody's there. When they want their friends to come over, we could ride our bikes down to the trailer park. I lived in the middle of an orange grove, right? Where do we go? Go to the trailer park, ride your bike down there. It's only 3.5 miles down the road, 6 miles down the road the other direction. We got all my friends in the world. I can just drive in. Can I do that if you're in a gated community?
No.
No, can't do it. But I go to the trailer park. Oh, but it's old class people. They're my friends, I didn't care. Don't have money, do have money. Kids don't care. Why do you adults worry about it so much?
Oh, no, you're right.
There's some trailer parks you shouldn't go to. Right? You walk in there and there's needles all over the ground. Yeah, don't go to that trailer park. But there's others perfectly acceptable. Nobody wants to do it because you got used to having a McMansion. Got used to having a new car every year.
Yeah.
Got used to so many things that are trivial. You don't want to go backwards, so you say. Yeah, we got used to Novus Ordo too. Don't want to go backwards in tradition, do you? Yeah, it actually works, doesn't it? 2406, political authority has the right and duty to regulate the legitimate exercise of the right to ownership for the sake of the common good. Political authority, the people that you vote in or the people who are in charge without your vote. They have the right and duty to regulate legitimate exercise of the right to ownership for the sake of the common good. Does that mean they can get rid of private property? No. That's not a legitimate use of that good when the state takes over these things. That's not their legitimate use. But they have a legitimate right, and it's important that even if you don't agree with a legitimate right, they have a legitimate right. There are rules and regulations we have to abide by. Even if we think the government, even if we know the government is misusing it, there are things that the government can say. For instance, we have zoning laws. You cannot have cows in the middle of Tampa. So although I joked about having them out here on the soccer field, I cannot have cows. I can have a horse. How do I know I can have a horse? Because we had somebody down the street that had a horse, and I kept seeing the horse riding up, and how in the world can it? Yep, Tampa allows you to have a horse. They regulate roosters, but you can have a horse. Very strange. So the government can regulate some things, and it helps the people get together better. if they did not have any regulations, for instance, we could have a strip club that opens up right next to us. Not exactly the best thing in the world. I'm glad that they can regulate and say no strip club in this neighborhood. So there are things that I agree with. Well, what if the strip club owner had a church move in right next to him? You think he's going to agree with that? No, probably not. But the government has a right to do that? Yeah. The government can say yes to the church moving in next to the strip club. Would we want to?
No.
I don't know. How fast could we convert them if we have processions around the strip club? Other busy days. Or nights. Imagine going around a strip club with the Blessed Sacrament, an image of the Blessed Mother being carried in procession. How many people would be willing to cross that line of believers as they're going in there? I'm not sure. We definitely better not find any more people there. Or the priests.
I'm on a mission.
The second subheading that we have in here is respect for persons and their goods. 2407. In economic matters, respect for human dignity requires the practice of the virtue of temperance, so as to moderate attachment to this world's goods. Temperance is often used with alcohol, is it not? What does it mean to be intemperate with alcohol? You're the drunkard, right? That everybody knows it's not good. Why? When you give up your faculty of thinking, you make yourself into nothing more than an animal. The dog cannot reason good from evil. He's just going to go on instinct. What happens to the man who is a drunkard? Oh, we joke about it. We sing country songs about it. But at 2 o'clock, that bar is filled with tens, right? At 2 o'clock, it's filled with tens. Where at 10 o'clock, it was filled with twos. You're looking at me with blank eyes. Yeah, thanks, good to be to God. You don't understand that. The drunkard is seeing how ugly the girls are when he's sober at 10 o'clock. And he says they're all twos. But after he's had to drinks all night long in his closing time, they all become tens. And he's taken any of them home that he can do. Right? He's become nothing more than an animal. This is what happens with us. Temperance and intemperance is pretty clear in alcohol. But it's in all things, all of our possessions, we have to have temperance, not just in alcohol, even though that's where it's usually used in our society today. We hear that the most. It moderates attachment to the world's goods. I should not be so attached to alcohol that I must have a buzz or be drunk, right? I should not. Is there anything wrong with having a drink?
No.
At the right time, the right place, you can have it. But you can't be attached to it. But even something that's good for you, what happens if you give it up? Is there anything wrong with giving up drinking? No, nothing wrong with that whatsoever. Would you be able to? For a lot of people, it's a really hard thing to even consider giving up. But how about something else? When we're having Lent and you're giving up all alcohol for Lent, can you do it? Now you've got a reason for it, right? For the sake of God. I'm offering up something that I enjoy and I do on a regular basis, and I know that during this time I'm going to have a wedding to go to, and I'm going to have birthday celebrations for my adult friends and all this kind of stuff, but I'm going to say no to every drink that's being offered to me during Lent because I'm making a sacrifice during Lent for our Lord. What a beautiful thing. Can we not do that with everything? How many people are afraid to give up things even during Lent? I cannot give up television. I cannot give up the computer. Women, I cannot give up makeup. that's the hardest one that I've ever suggested to women, and the one that gets the most negatives of everything. I cannot give that up. For the men, give up hot showers. Not a chance. Not a chance. Not going to do that. All these things, we should not have such a desire for the things in this world, even the good things in this world, that we cannot give them up.
You can do it.
We should be willing to do it for Lent, of course. But if we can do it for Lent, can we not do it other times? Why not? Why not? There's some things we get attached to, though. I can't give up. Well, let's see. How about air conditioning? Yeah, I grew up here in Florida without air conditioning. Not in the house, not in the car.
Yeah, we never.
Can I give it up? I would not want to. Not a chance. I would not want to. But could I? I know I've survived before, so I know I can survive again. Am I attached to it? Yes. No doubt about it. I am guilty as charged. I'm the one that charged myself with this. I love air conditioning. I would rather go without heat in the wintertime, in Florida at least,
yeah,
than to go without air conditioning in the summertime.
Yeah.
And summer lasts most of the year. I would much rather go without heat than without air conditioning. My mom is exactly the opposite. She's always cold. She would rather have no air conditioning and have heat all the time. But could we give it up? I don't know. There's so much stuff that we have to be temperate about, we don't even think about it. What are we attached to? I will not shop any place except for Whole Foods. You know that Publix? Ugh, I look down my nose at people who shop at Publix. And the people at Aldi's, oh my goodness, that's worse.
That's worse, that's right.
Whole Foods is it. Really, we get attached to things, and then we start looking at things we used to have as if there's something wrong. But for most of our life, we shop where? Yeah, the cash and carry, the cheapest one we can find. Then we started having more money, and we started spending it on higher food prices than ever, and then we start making it look like we have to. There's so many things we get intemperate about. Does that mean you have to give up food? No, but could you survive just working on eating canned food? Yeah, SpaghettiOs.
Oh.
Right? Worse than ramen noodles. Could you survive on that?
Oh,
are you
yeah.
attached to food? We're attached to so many things without ever admitting that we're attached to these things. We're supposed to be able to say, you know what? This is the kind of stuff I bring in for the soup kitchen. I bring in SpaghettiOs. I bring in peanut butter. I bring in the canned foods. And I give it to them. Would I not be willing to eat it myself? This is what a lot of people do during Lent when they're giving up food. They take the money they saved from the food and they use it on a vacation. What does the church say to do with it? Give it to the poor.
Give some to the poor.
Give it to the people that don't have the food that you normally do all the time. Give it to them. Oh, Father, I don't even know where the poor people are. Oh, I know they're shopping at Publix. I'll give it to them. Oh, we're attached to things so much that oftentimes we're not willing to give. We don't see an intemperance in our life. We just think it's normal. And we set our bars very high for ourselves. We must keep this. We really don't have to. And if there's ever a time when you're thinking, I can't give to the poor, I can't take care of my neighbor, take a look at what you're attached to and see if maybe you need to get rid of some attachments if it's keeping you from being truly holy. We're going to finish up, the bells are ringing, we're going to finish up. The practice of the virtue of justice, to preserve our neighbor's rights and render him what is his due. This is in economic matters, remember, this is what I'm talking about, the dignity of the human person requires this, that we practice virtue. It's a virtue, justice. Virtue, again, is not just a one-time showing justice, but virtue is a habitual act of showing justice to people. That's the virtue of justice. A habitual act of preserving our neighbor's rights and rendering him what is due. I gave the example of the neighbor who plays his rap music loud all night long. He is not giving you your rights. You have a right to not be interrupted by garbage like rap music in the first place, by not having your sleep deprived. Does that mean he can never play his music? Well, rap music he should never play anyway, but there are times that is acceptable from a human community. It's acceptable to have silence and acceptable to have noise. So again, we should be able to say, not in the middle of the night, you don't play this stuff. He's taking that away from you. He's not giving you justice, but injustice. And the practice of solidarity, in accordance with the golden rule and in keeping with the generosity of the Lord. What's the golden rule? Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. That's the golden rule. Is that biblical? It's very biblical that you would do something like that, right? You render to Caesar what is Caesar's and to God what is God's. What would you want people to render to you? You'd want them to render justice. You'd want them to be fair. You'd want them to watch out for your needs. We need to do that to others as well. In accordance with the golden rule and in keeping with the generosity of the Lord, who though he was rich, yet for your sake became poor, so that by his poverty you might become rich. So if you have to become poor to help somebody else to become rich, isn't that worth it? If you have to eat SpaghettiOs, it's just one of those things that I just can't imagine that would be something an adult would want. But if you had to eat SpaghettiOs in order to give somebody else money who didn't even have SpaghettiOs to eat, you're making them rich by sharing your SpaghettiOs with them, even though it means you're not having your steak that you wanted or the hamburger that you wanted or anything like that. You're eating SpaghettiOs because he didn't have anything. Isn't it? We know it when we're just talking about it theoretically, but this is what the church is trying to instill in us as a way of life. Thinking about these things all the time. We're given things, we're given the properties that it's talking about in here, not just for ourselves, although it is for ourselves, not just our family, but it is for the family first, but also for others who are outside of ourselves and outside of our families. So keep it in mind when you're trying to figure out what you do with what you have been blessed by God, because we're going to have to answer for that at the time of judgment. All right, and that is where we're going to end today.